Good morning. This is Community Speaks, and it's being brought to you by the Prescription Shop on Fort Street. Stop on in and see them. They've got a lot more than just prescription medication. This is Community Speaks, and joining me this morning is Steve Forsman. Steve, how you doing today?
Pretty good. How about you?
Very well. We appreciate you coming in today, and today you're going to speak a little bit on sort of the history of laws and juries and some of the reasons that our Constitution is sort of written the way it is.
Yes, necessary to remind people of our history and heritage to get a feel of how things work and why. I talked about the Bundy case a little bit last month. You know, Cliven Bundy in Nevada, the cattle rancher that was abused by the government. And that case was dismissed, ultimately. But there's a problem where human nature is such that people like to control their lives by nature. They like to have power over, say-so over what they do as a matter of convenience for their own life to make it work right. Unfortunately, though, they carry that over into their relationships with other people, because for their own convenience, they want to have power over what others do as it influences them. And this happens whether you're in politics or in law, if you're a judge or a prosecutor, attorney, or in government of any capacity. That's a natural inclination. our Magna Carta, well, on June 15th, 1215, the year 1215, on Runnymede, the nobles of England got a little tired of the king's overbearing, domineering attitude, and they put him up to a sword and told him, "You're going to sign this, the Magna Carta, as authority, or else you're not going to be anymore." And the Magna Carta contained a concept of freedom and individuality, and it contained within it the concept of a trial by 12 jurors of your peers. A peer is somebody of equal status and rank.
Not necessarily a friend, like when they say peer pressure.
That's right.
Yeah.
A peer is somebody of equal status to you. But that this was to overcome the king's overbearing attitude towards law. Now, law in early times, if you look at our Constitution, it discusses common law and makes reference to common law, the term common law, many times. And if you read Wyoming state statute, it also makes reference to common law, but it does it in a way that is confusing. So I want to kind of delineate the differences. If you look at human society anthropologically, if you study structure of society in any culture, you'll see that every community has what we refer to as community standards. In other words, there's a personality in every community. This is more pronounced in third world countries. I've seen a lot of this, where you can go into one community and the attitude of the people in that community, what they think is right and wrong, is markedly different from that which is apparent in other communities. In some of those third world countries I've seen, in a mere 50 miles, you see it's like being an entirely different country. I mean, the whole moral structure of the communities is different, you know, because they don't have the communications that we have. But still today, we adhere to the concept of community values or standards. Now, common law traditionally recognized that, and what it originally meant was that the community dictated the standards of behavior for that area. so that common law really meant the people of your community decide ultimately what's right and wrong. And the jury was structured on that basis. In other words, if there was some statutory regulation that had been handed down by the king, the local jury could say, no, that doesn't match up with what we think. And so that's where common law came from originally. However, centralized government began to analyze the common law, realized this was a problem for them because they want everything nationally uniform. This is a problem we have in our country today, is the federal government wants to dictate over the states and over the citizens of the states what they should do, whereas the states say, no, no, this is our community. We have our standards, and what's right and wrong is up to us to determine. So, but at any rate, the problem is that governments try to centralize what was common law. So the British Crown at one point decided they were going to codify common law. So rather than have individualized community standards, they tried to establish a uniform common law that applied to everybody. Now, this is confusing. And as I say, Wyoming state statute makes reference to codified British common law, which confuses the issue. But where I was going with that is in the Bundy case, you had the government deciding, whereas the people of the community obviously were opposed to what the government was doing. And Cliven Bundy was upset because his own county government didn't stand up against the feds. They knuckled under. But the point being here is that ultimately the jury has the right to make those decisions. Now, in the Bundy case, I'm not making reference to any jury decision. But what I'm pointing out here is that the jury was established as the last arbiter of what is right and wrong. Often, all the time, when you go to court, the judge will tell you, these are the facts of the case, and he'll give you guidelines by which to make a decision. But this is not the way juries were established. Juries were established to be the final arbiter of the law. And that means that the jury can say, no, no, that's wrong. And now, so people will disagree about that because the judge, in other words, decides how you're going to decide, then you're not deciding.
Yeah, then you don't really need the jury.
Exactly right. Now, this has been before the Supreme Court in 1794 for the first jury trial at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said that the jury's job was to decide whether or not the law was applicable, whether it was properly applied, or whether it was just. Now, going back to common law, and this is the basis of our constitutional law, no crime has been committed unless somebody else's person or property has been damaged. And what we've perverted that. And also in the early days of law, the standard was the spirit of the law or the intention of the law. And so you were supposed to be prosecuted only if you violated the spirit of the law, and that being damage to somebody else. But that's evolved, as I say, to the point where people want to legislate absolutely everything to control everybody else. And so the point I'm getting at here, and then again in 1894, the case came up again to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court made the same declaration. Now, a number of cases, Daugherty, for example, this has been elucidated powerfully by the court, that the jury has, as I say, the ultimate right to make a decision. I think you've probably seen cases where you thought that the prosecutor shouldn't have brought the case to begin with, and when he did, he got a conviction that he shouldn't have gotten, because it was, as I say, the letter of the law was inflicted on in a case where the morals of the situation dictated otherwise. For example, in some self-defense cases I've seen, they prosecuted the victim because the victim, in a case of panic, overdid it on the perpetrator. And now the ordinary guy is going to say, well, the guy deserved it. You see what I mean? The juror is going to say, well, the guy got what was coming to him. And the jury has the right to make that determination. The court has held over and over again that law is based on morals. Now, you get legislators that perpetrate laws that are not based on morals or religious principles or anything else. They're based on statutory control. And sometimes you get screwball initiatives where people want to inflict their will on their neighbors, and legislators or commissioners or whoever go along with it out of political pressure, but the morality of the thing is totally unjust. So in these cases, the juror has a right to make that decision. A lot of people, as I say, are fearful of of what the judge says, but as I've pointed out, our Constitution clearly says that our laws are based on nature and nature's God, the laws of nature and nature's God. Now, there, just to illustrate the point, you cannot possibly be punished by the court for making a judgment that disagrees with the court. There's no way they can do anything about that. Now, I'll go back to, actually, in a trial by jury, jurors are the judges, ultimately. The judge is a referee. He decides what people can and can't do in the courtroom. But the jurors can take anything into consideration that they please. The judge will give you instructions that your decision must be made within certain parameters of evidence produced and so forth and so on. I've seen cases where as a reporter, I attended a criminal case one time where if I'd have been a juror, I'd been tempted to find not guilty just because the prosecutor was such a sleazeball. I'm serious. The guy, he said things that were uncalled for, and it was just absolutely disgusting. But like I say, our this goes back to Runnymede, the idea of juries, but it's in our Constitution in the Bill of Rights. Remember, the Bill of Rights came about as a result of largely a British history and colonial history up to that point. So you find in the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed. In other words, wherever you commit the crime, it's your local peers who are entitled to make a judgment as to whether or not what you did was improper. Which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against you. In other words, these can't be anonymous people.
Because then otherwise they could just say, yeah, this person said you did this and someone said you did that, and they wouldn't actually have to produce the evidence.
They try to do that.
Yeah.
And to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. The Seventh Amendment says, in suits at common law, this is in civil law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right to trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. In other words,
is that kind of referring to double jeopardy?
It does.
Saying you can't be tried twice, basically.
Yeah, but this is civil law. There are provisions against being tried twice. That's in the Fifth Amendment. But the point here is that it says, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court. In other words, the jury is the final arbiter. And it doesn't... You can, as I say, you can consider anything. It doesn't have to be what's presented by the judge or the prosecutor. You can make any judgment you want. As I say, you can say, this guy's a sleazeball.
Well, and sometimes I wonder if any common sense is used in courts. In the one that always comes to mind for me, and I can't remember how long ago this was. I want to say 15, 20 years. There was a guy who... hurt himself while breaking into someone's house.
Yes.
And he successfully sued them.
Yes.
He won. How does that happen? I understand he's on their property, yada, yada, yada. The guy was breaking in. He was committing a felony, and yet he's going to get rewarded for it.
This is my point. The judge will say you're only allowed to make a decision based on what's presented. A lot of court cases don't cover the bases. Because, firstly, the attorneys, prosecutor and defense attorney, will try to stack the jury, both of them, and in their favor, and they have to make compromises in doing that. They'll agree or disagree on certain juror, and they'll excuse them because one or the other can't abide this guy. And one of the things that will happen is they'll try to restrict to the jury what the jury can make a decision upon, which lawyers are really good at this. They'll get on a little fine point that's isolated from the whole picture, and they'll get in there and argue this remote point that's really irrelevant and win the case on it because the other guy can't argue that silly point. Well, so they will try to restrict the juror to deciding in that context, whereas the juror can look at the whole thing and say, that's nonsense, it's a stupid argument, never mind, the guy did it.
Sure, sure.
But the problem is the public doesn't understand that the jury has that right. The jury has the right to decide whether this guy should have been prosecuted at all to begin with. Now, to emphasize this point, by the way, Abraham Lincoln said the people are the masters of both Congress and the courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert it. In other words, it's your job as a juror to preserve freedom under the Constitution and more, and the laws of nature, nature's God, as you see fit. You can say that that's not fair, but what is fair? You know, fair is subjective, isn't it?
Fair is where they vote on sheep and pigs.
Yeah.
Well, county fair.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what they say when you talk about fairness. You know, there's really no such thing. You know?
Yeah, exactly. to make that point, there's some interesting history. You know who William Penn was, right?
William Penn, I recall the name, but off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you who William Penn was.
Well, the Pennsylvania was founded by William Penn.
That would make sense.
William Penn in England was the head of the Quakers. He was the leader of the Quaker movement. And this is why the Quaker movement was so strong. He came to the United States to escape England. Now, what happened in England was, by the way, William Penn said, quote, "Those people who are not governed by God will be ruled by tyrants." And this is the point, isn't it? You talked about a specific case. I remember a case I knew of in Billings where a guy, ironically, was a security operator. He went around and sold security systems to people. He was working. He was in public during the day. This guy was a karate student, and he parked his work vehicle and got out and was immediately assaulted by a couple of black guys on a busy downtown street in the middle of the day who tried to rob him in public. So the first guy comes up and he trashed the first guy. And the second guy took one look at that and took off running. But the guy wasn't going to let him go. I mean, what is he going to do? So he chases him down and thrashed him. And he damaged him permanently. And so they tried to go after him for that.
Yeah.
And they tried to punish him for thrashing these muggers.
For defending himself, basically.
Yeah.
But they went after him because he actually went and chased that guy down. They were kind of probably trying to say, well, he was already leaving the scene, and if you would have just done nothing,
He was basically trying to arrest him, which he did. But, of course, he got off because it was discovered that that second guy had a gun in his pocket. But I'm just making a point that these are discussions that we need to have. You know, like I said, the guys deserved it, frankly. They deserved it, and I would have found them not guilty.
Yeah, something like that shouldn't even make its way into the court.
Exactly right. Well, at any rate, William Penn, as a Quaker leader in England, had a problem with the government. They passed the Conventicle Act in England, which sanctified as absolute the Church of England, and this made the King of England basically the Pope and the arbiter of what everybody had to believe. Now, the penalty of violation of the Conventicle Act was death. In other words, if you preached any gospel other than what the king had determined through the Church of England to be true, you are a heretic and you would be put to death.
Sounds like what they still do over in North Korea.
Yes.
To a point.
We've discussed communism, and I could go on for hours about the things that have happened under communists that way. Socialism is not justice. It doesn't defend the individual from... The whole purpose of juries is to defend the weak from the powerful majority. That's the purpose of a jury. But at any rate, William Penn was arrested and thrown into prison on penalty of death if he were found guilty. But according to, as I said, the jury, they have impaneled 12 jurors of peers. And one of them was named Edward Bushell, who was a shipping magnate at the time. He had a big fleet of international shipping. And he thought there were 12 jurors. Four of them, including Bushell, said, no, this is nonsense. Well, the king overstepped his authority. He said, okay, you're going to find this guy guilty or you're going to pay. So he put those four jurors in prison with no food and water. They were smeared with feces and urine, and they lived under torture for a great long period of time because the king demanded that they would find William Penn guilty.
Jury tampering.
Boy,
we still get that on a little different level, but...
we do.
Yeah.
This is my whole point. They try to tell the jury what they're going to, who they're going to convict. But these guys held out. They knew their rights. They held out. And finally, William Penn was acquitted, set free. And this is just to demonstrate the history.
Those jurors ever get set free?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were, because they had to be. I mean, the king was overly powerful. You remember under a couple of issues under Barack Obama where he said, I don't have the constitutional authority to do that, and then turn around and did it anyway.
Right.
And he said that several times, that he couldn't do it. He wasn't a king or a dictator, and then he went and did it. Well, this is the problem. The king had, according to the Magna Carta, the king had limited authority, but he did it anyway. And by the way, this is a side note. If you look at British history, you can see the king now has almost no power in England, or the queen in this case, has almost no power at all. The parliament pretty much runs the government. They don't have a constitution, by the way, but they have a parliament made up of nobles and whatnot, the House of Lords and the House of Commons, and they make the ultimate authoritative judgments on things. But Pennsylvania would not exist. Our own constitutional provisions of free speech, freedom of religion, et cetera, were all based on William Penn's case back in England. Our founders decided that this was an important issue.
I'm going to have you kind of give us your final thoughts here, as I've got another guest coming in this morning.
Well, I appreciate the time.
Absolutely.
And what is the essence here is that the jury is, that's your final vote as a citizen, as a member of common law. We don't have to kowtow to legislators to want to be gods and dictators in this country, as Edward Bushell has pointed out, and as our courts have decided. I don't have time to read all the court cases. I have a whole list of court cases here where they have said the juror is the final arbiter in any case, and they are entitled to bring any argument in their minds to bear on any case, whether civil or criminal. So that's my issue for today. And I'll be back again March 29th.
All right. We look forward to it. Talking with Steve Forsman. Steve, again, thank you for taking the time this morning.
And I appreciate you. Thank you.
This is Community Speaks, and it's being brought to you by the Prescription Shop on Fort Street. Stay tuned. We've got another guest coming up this morning. It is Megan Washit with the Buffalo Children's Center. They've got a fundraiser coming up. We'll talk about that next.